Well, I feel some of the joy of a proud father. Master, as you know, had a great fervor for this ideal of communities. He spoke with great power about it all through his life, and I am very glad and honored to have been the instrument through which this was accomplished. But the question may remain in many people's minds, how important are these communities to his mission? I have to say that they are central. His first mission, of course, was to help individuals to find God. But in the world where the influences are so often in the other direction, it is a great help to be able to mix with people who share your ideals. Master used to say, environment is stronger than willpower. And when you live with people who's, for instance, in an office, when people are having their usual little squabbles and so on, it's very difficult to keep your mind on God. But there's more to it than that. Supposing every person in this crowd today were to go to a different city, and he would live, I suppose, practicing these teachings, a peaceful life. And when there were arguments in the office, he might be a force for peace. But people, if they asked him, how come you do this? He'd say, because I practice Kriya Yoga. And they would say, probably it's because you eat bran for breakfast. They would attribute trivial reasons to his peace, or maybe you're just a very special kind of person. But they wouldn't be able to understand clearly that it's what he's doing that makes them that way. Somebody many years ago said to me, you have some wonderful people here. I said that if you say that, seeing one or two people, you can say they're wonderful people. When you see everybody like that, you have to say it's what they're doing. When you have a group of people living together in harmony, in peace, eager to help each other, serving each other, thinking in terms of giving and not of getting, living in harmony with man and with God. And you see a group of people like that, that makes a statement. It begins to seem a possibility for everyone to embrace. This is a very important statement socially. Individually, it's an important statement because people begin to feel, I too could be like that. When you see people individually, you don't get that impression. But when you see everybody doing it, you think, well, I have that potential myself. What Master came to give us, as Jesus did, as all the great masters do, they don't come to show us how special they are. They come to show us our own potential. They show us our own highest possibility. Somebody in Australia once, many years ago, and many of you know this story, he came to me after a talk, and he said, well, I've heard your talk, but I'm an atheist. What have you got to say that would impress me? How could you define God in a way that I could respect it? And I said, why don't you think of God as the highest potential you could imagine for yourself? And he looked quite shocked, and he said, well, I can live with that. Well, this is what God is. He's our highest potential. He's not somebody off in the clouds. He's that which you go higher and higher and higher until you achieve a perfection that is absolute. But as the highest potential you can imagine is the highest potential you can strive for. And this is what we help people to see, that it's doable. Communities are a very important thing, and Master said that they would become a vital element in the new society in Dwapara Yuga. There are several reasons why it's important, and he listed a number of them. One of them is a negative one. The fact that we are coming into a very serious depression. He predicted this depression years ago, but he said it would be much worse than the 1930s. He said people wouldn't have the food to eat. Even a few months ago, to bring food into the inner city in Detroit, it was necessary to have two people riding shotgun on either side of the truck, lest the truck be attacked before it could even reach the inner city. This is going to be a problem. We're going to find that people don't have jobs, they don't have money, and the money they do have won't be worth the paper it's printed on. These are the directions we're going in. I could argue this point with you. Some of you might not agree. It wouldn't much matter. It's obvious that the economy of the world is going in a wrong direction right now, but it's the result of people's avarice. It's the result of people thinking they can get rich quick without making the effort. And the cure is going to be God. In the last depression, what it resulted in was people thinking of us four and no more. My family, my wife, my children. Now, Master said in the next one, people will have much less money, but they will have much more desire for God. And so this depression will be a good thing in the long run. And my salvation is just on the corner here, just on the edge. And you'd better bring it quickly because... Come. Like a desert traveler. Thank you. I remember that maybe, I suppose we're all born for a certain thing. I think I was born, among other things, to start these communities. Because even when I was 15, I had this idea. And I got all my friends interested because I'm an enthusiastic type. And whatever I really want, everybody seems to want also. When I used to like to go skiing at Mount Washington, everybody went skiing. Now nobody goes skiing. Well, I would tell my friends about it, and they all got interested, and they all were eager for it until they found I was serious. Then they all dropped off. But I still thought, I know that 15 is not the age at which you can start communities. But I had this idea, and I've always had it. And when I traveled around the world, I would look for communities that would give me ideas for how it would be possible to succeed financially. I would visit, I remember visiting a kibbutz in Israel, and I went to many different places to try to figure out how these things could support themselves. And I know that the beginning of it was probably based in my genes, or whatever you want to call them, but one thing that helped me very much was the movie Lost Horizon. I saw it just a few days ago, and it's really a charming movie. And the idea that they would, when the world sort of bombed itself back to the caves, they would preserve civilization and bring it out again. That was my romantic childhood idea. But I also felt that this is what is needed in the world, small communities. Big cities are not the answer. Big cities breed diseases, and I don't mean physical diseases. I mean mental diseases such as competitiveness and ruthlessness and ambition that runs roughshod over other people. Those diseases are a part of the modern scene. Small communities, I have to say that I suspect that the big cities today will no longer be a part of the scene in another 100 years. I think that people will begin more and more to think in terms of living in the country with a few other people. You can't live alone in the country and meet all the needs that we're accustomed to. I write books, but I know I can't eat paper. So I need other people who can grow food. When I was working on carpentry, Master had me working on building, helping to build, I should say, really obstructing the the building of India Center in Hollywood. And I would hit at a nail 9 times and miss it. And the 10th time the nail would bend over. And this sort of pall of despair would come over my mind. And it just wasn't my métier, you might say. Perhaps if I had wanted to, I could have learned it. I don't know. But you can't do everything. And I can do a few things decently. And so why not concentrate on them? There was one woman who said she wanted to become a millionaire. At 75, she decided to become a millionaire. She'd been a secretary all her life. Of course she never became a millionaire. It takes skill to be things. You don't have to in order to reach liberation. She thought to find liberation, I must be perfect in every way. That isn't what you need to look for. When you've got a lake that is covered with ice, you don't have to break through the whole ice. Just find one spot and go through it. If you can do one thing well, that's quite enough. But community is necessary. In our community, there isn't a need that we don't find somebody is capable, at least, of meeting that need. People who are in all the different walks of life, and they've studied different things. I can't remember a time when we didn't have, when we had some need, that there wasn't somebody in the community who could fulfill it at least adequately. You need a group of people. Man is a social animal. Man needs his fellow human beings. I remember somebody who lived in Montana all alone, and after 10 years, somebody moved in 10 miles away, and he just had to get out of there. It was getting too damn crowded. Well, such people are unusual types. Most of us need other people. And actually, this is one of the wonderful things spiritually, that when you see other people, we all have the same ideals. We don't have rules that say you must do this or you must be that. We say that this is what will make you happy. It's up to you. If you want happiness, then you will do this. Some people are better at it than others. And as a result, we find that some people are rather bad at some of these qualities. Some people, for example, come and think, what's in it for me? How high can I rise in the leadership ladder? How I. Well, we have seen over, well, this is now our 42nd year that we've been around. That's a long time, enough time to say that we know what we're doing. And what we've seen is that people who have the right attitude are always happy, always harmonious. Those who have certain wrong attitudes are not happy, are not harmonious. Those who are wrong in certain ways but right in others, they flourish in the right ways, not in the wrong ways. And so you see, with all these lessons that you get to observe day after day after day, not like in the city where there was a story of a couple that were moving out after 2 years, moving out of their apartment. And the people from upstairs came down, they saw their luggage on the doormat outside, and they said, oh, you've just moved in, welcome, we're all one big happy family here. They'd been there 2 years and had never even met each other. Well, in the world, you don't even know your neighbor. You can't tell. You don't see them in their bedrooms, in their kitchens, in their living rooms. They can put on a good mask. But when you see people in a community, living day in and day out, you get to know them pretty well. And you see them over a period of time so that you can find out that certain attitudes really do work and others don't work so well and others don't work at all. And this is really a very important aspect of cooperative communities where people live together and you find that those who share with others are always happy. Those who think of themselves last and think of giving and being generous and so on, they're always happy. Happiness depends above all on attitude. Another thing is you find that people who have money, that doesn't change their happiness. Happiness comes from right attitude. Happiness comes from being expansive in your nature instead of contractive. So many spiritual lessons you can learn when you can live with other people in a community that you can't learn in practicing Kriya Yoga and doing all those things, but in the cities. So communities are the most important thing, I think, quite honestly, that are going on this planet today. We're getting groups of people, and now we're building the eighth such group. And we have about 1,000. I haven't gone around counting them all, but I think it's about 1,000 people who live in all of them. That's enough to give you a good example. But I would like to suggest something more. And that is that people who are belong to other communities, other paths, who follow other teachings, that all of these groups, ashrams and so on, that we work together, that we not build a fence around our community. And I say this for several reasons. One is you get away from that thought that we're the best. That's ego. That doesn't help you. To share with other people, even if their beliefs are different from yours, is, I think, important. There's another thing, too. Mahatma Gandhi said that in order to have a village that is completely self-sustaining, you need at least 1,000 people. That way one person can cut everybody's hair, one person, and so on, you know. And the different needs that we have, there's always somebody who can fulfill that need. Well, when you have a broad base, I think that there is the possibility of having much more security. There's another point here, too. And this is one I'd like to propose quite seriously, that in the time of economic depression, during the last depression, there was a town in the Midwest, I don't remember where or which one it was, that survived by having its own currency. I would like to propose that those people who know how to think about these things, and I'm certainly not one of them, think in terms of how we could build a currency, what we could base it on that would make it solid, but that would not be subject to hyperinflation, for example. Hyperinflation is almost inevitable now. You know that the derivatives debt today is about a quadrillion. You can't pay that off. It's just hopeless. He's a nice fellow. I'm being political at the moment, but I don't mean to be. He seems like a nice fellow. But I have to say he's probably going to ruin this country for the very fact of being a nice fellow. He wants to print money for everybody. Where is that going to take you except to hyperinflation? I think he's going to prove to be a disaster. Nice fellow or not. But don't blame him. Jesus Christ himself couldn't create a successful economy and a successful community country now. This country has gone so far in the direction of indebtedness, printing a few trillion here and a few trillion there. Where do they get that money? Paper. And where does that paper lead to? Finally, there was a story in the Great Depression, the Great Hyperinflation in Germany, where a man took his paycheck home in a wheelbarrow, overflowing, and he wanted to go into a shop, and he left the wheelbarrow outside because he said, nobody's going to bother stealing this money. He came out and found the money all over the street. Somebody had stolen the wheelbarrow. Well, this is the reality. We're coming to that reality, and it's a very serious one. I know that the Bhrigu reading that I got many years ago spoke of the future in his country when there will be weeping in every home. If you love God, if you believe in God, you will be able to rise above everything. This is another thing that makes communities a wonderful thing, because in a community it's easier to give your life to God. Everybody takes care of everybody else. And in this community, if somebody's couple are getting married, people all pitch in to give them money so they can go off on a honeymoon. Somebody's sick, people pitch in to help them get through the hospital, they visit them and so on. These are things you don't find in the world. In the world, you have everybody stands alone. There was a man who was dying, and he had six stalwart sons. So he asked the sons to go and get six sticks, and he put all the sticks together and asked the strongest of them to break them, and he couldn't break them. Then he took one stick himself, and weak as he was on his deathbed, he snapped that stick. He said, "Let this be a lesson, my sons. Always stick together. We're much more than six people, but we are people who can and do help one another in crises, in difficulties." And another good thing, which you don't get in social systems, you know who the pikers are, and you're not going to help them as much as you are those who really are sincere. Not only that, but you can't really be a piker, which is to say, somebody who doesn't do anything and lets other people take care of him. You can't do that in a community because everybody sees through you. Everybody knows. So what you see is that everybody is conscientious and does something. I was so impressed. The day after I arrived here, I went around our different businesses and to the retreat and so on. And it was really wonderful to see how full of sharing joy everybody was. Well, this is a community. It's Ananda Community, and it's well named because it's a joyful community. So I'm speaking of Ananda, but I'm speaking also of the future. I think more and more, and it's becoming possible because society is helping us in this way. For example, now with computers, it's possible to live alone in the country. You don't have to be with your customers. You can sell through the computers. You can do so many things by computer that you couldn't do before. In the past, people needed cities. They won't need cities in the same way anymore. And so society is evolving to that point where it will be economically feasible to have places in the country where people can live. Master used to say, get land in the country where you can grow your own food, you can live simply. We don't have to dress according to the latest style. I always say people who follow style don't have any taste. Because if you have taste, you don't think about what's in this year. You just think what's attractive and proper. But in these communities, living close to the soil, you don't have to think about being chic. You can spend much less money on food, on clothing, and all the necessities of life. People can help you build your home. If I were here, you could almost say that I've done it in self-defense. I couldn't build my own house, but I didn't do it with that spirit. When you have that, you have the beginnings of a society that I think will spread. Master said it would spread like wildfire. That people everywhere, not necessarily people who are spiritually inclined, there can be other types of communities, but I have to say that those that are spiritually inclined, without being dogmatic and narrow-minded and just us four and no more attitude, that those people will find that they have a security that other people don't have. So in the model that we have set, mind you, starting Ananda was not an easy thing. There were, back in the days when Ananda started, there were certain sociological investigations or whatever, and they found that the average length of a new community was 30 days. The average length. Some lasted as long as 6 months. It was very rarely that a community was able to survive even a year. So to have been here 42 years says something. And so my experience in starting communities, that's something that's worth knowing. But it will not be so difficult for people to start new communities if they follow the model that we have finally established. We can always say, and we don't need Ananda communities everywhere, but if they follow the Ananda model, it's much easier to say, well, this is how we do it. Newcomers will say, well, if it's how you do it, all right, and they either accept it or reject it. But in the beginning, everybody was saying, how are we going to do it? And it took a lot of patience and whatever else it takes in order to hang in there. I remember this one person came up with the idea. Mind you, I was 41 when I began Ananda. That's hardly decrepit. But one person came and said that the system in Japan is that when people get old, the new people come in and push the older ones. The older ones gracefully retire. And he was trying to say that I should gracefully retire and let him take over. And I had to be firm sometimes. I had to say to him, Dick, his name was Dick, I said, I have not started Ananda to turn it over to you. And I had to be firm sometimes. But I had to know when not to be firm and when to be firm. That takes a certain ability. I can't say that it was an easy experience. It's so nice now to find that you don't have to fight. It used to be that every time I opened my mouth, at least six people would try to jump into it. It was not fun. There was one time when I called everybody together. I said, listen, I didn't start this community to fight. I said, I could leave this community in 5 minutes and not even once look back. But I said, I don't insist on my way, but there are times when I do insist, and I want you all to agree that if I do insist, you will do what I say. And I didn't, you know, I'm not dumb. I waited until I knew I had a majority on my side. There's no point in blowing into the wind. But when I had that majority on my side, I gave them this challenge, and about 50 people left, and it was good riddance to bad rubbish, in my opinion. But gradually, we reached the point where now we can say, this is how we do it. And people join that or don't join that. It's perfectly simple. It's a big world. You don't all have to do the same thing. But now it will be much easier. And I do recommend that those of you who would like to start communities but not join this Ananda community, that you try to follow our model. It will save you endless anguish if you don't have to fight every step of the way to get your will through to people. I used to give in on little things in order to gain the main things. And those people who were in tune with what I wanted, I gave them more energy. Another very important thing is, if there are negative people, don't worry about it. Don't fight them. They'll gradually eliminate themselves anyway. Just serenely go your own way. I've always made it my bottom line not to lose my inner peace. And so if people wanted to fight about things, I remember in the beginning, we had this land to pay off somehow. And I went to Sacramento. I was staying there trying to earn money with classes and so on to pay for the mortgage. Jyotish was in San Francisco and he was starting a oil business. And a few people were out there trying to get things going so we could pay the mortgage. But I came up here one time, I remember, and I said that we really all ought to think about paying this mortgage. Well, they were here for God. They were outraged that I would suggest they earn money. And they thought, well, if you want to earn money, that's your business. And they just took that as the sign that God was taking care of them. Well, this kind of attitude was not designed to win my heart, I have to say. And it did come to the point where people like that didn't remain. But in the beginning, there was, even to earn money to support this community, there was one time they they created a set of bylaws and a whole corporation to try to separate the farm from the retreat. And I was in India at the time, so there wasn't anything I didn't even know about it till I got back. But when I got back and I found they were doing this, one of the main things in the bylaws was that Kriyananda will have nothing to say with how we do things. That was a bylaw. I said, listen, if I let you go through with this, I'll give you 6 months to survive. 3 months to get your mortgage, your, what's the word?
Foreclosure.
Your foreclosure notice. 3 more months for that foreclosure notice to take effect, then you'll be out of here. I said, all the people who are paying for this land are living up at the retreat. And so I simply wouldn't let them. There are times when you have to be absolutely firm. And you have to know when to be firm and when to be lenient. But always you have to deal with common sense. Some people, this was a common way of speaking in those days. I feel this is what we should do. Well, blast the feelings. Common sense is what rules in these things. Yes, you can have feelings, but I never say to people, I feel this is... That's not the intuitive way. Anyway, I don't want to labor you with the great problems that we had in getting Ananda started. They weren't easy. And when we finally got it to the point where it was starting to go smoothly, we had a forest fire. It destroyed 450 of our 700 acres, destroyed most of our houses. And this is before the path came out. I was in Hawaii editing it, and I came all the way from Hawaii to talk to people and give them courage and so on. We lost quite a few people at that time. But gradually, with this winnowing process, we found that those who were really dedicated were the ones who remained. When you start communities, don't think of people who are trying to just get away from it all. Take responsible people, people who are willing to take their share in a responsible way. These people in those days thought they were serving God. How were they serving God? Well, by going swimming in the Yuba River every day, all day. It was a time of irony, I have to say. Anyway, with good and loyal people like Jyotish and Devi and many others who were here, gradually it came to the point where now we have a stalwart group of people. And I, looking at the ones I met in the office, in the dining room, everywhere, I felt so much joy. It was really a great comfort to me to see how many people have really taken it and made it their own. One beautiful thing about Ananda is you don't have a rulership that tells everybody what to do. Maria Warner, when she lived in Encinitas for a while, and she worked in the retreat kitchen, I believe, and the door between the kitchen and the dining room was broken. 6 months later, when she left there, they still hadn't repaired that door because permission had not come down from the board of directors. Well, in my opinion, that is not the way to run an organization. You must give people the freedom to be themselves, to do things themselves, and they may not do it as well as you, but at least they're doing it. Any leader who thinks that he... I know Daya said to me, Master told me to keep the reins in my hands. I said, but he didn't tell you to be the horse. You have to let other people take over. Sometimes they won't do it as well as you can. Sometimes they'll surprise you and do it much better than you could. But you've got to understand that as God is center everywhere, circumference nowhere, so a community of people is centered in each person, and each person should have a chance to express himself. So what you've got is a basic direction all are going in, but in that basic direction, everybody is free to pull with his own strength and his own creativity. This is a way of life that will be possible in this new age of Dwapara. Master's vision of a community that would be a model for the new age was based on the fact that in Dwapara Yuga, you're not just bound to the soil. You're not bound just to plant food and grow food and so on. You can do things in new and creative ways, and many different types of people can live together and make a success of it. Another beautiful thing about this age into which we're coming in, and I think that the depression will help a great deal in that respect, that people will not think in terms of money as the social status symbol. We don't even think about how much money people have. We think in terms of them as devotees of God. I know there was one time back in 1969, that was the year we actually formally established Ananda, some young man came to me and he said, well, I've inherited a certain amount of money and I'm wondering, should I come and live here, in which case I'd give the money to Ananda, or should I go to India? Well, I was thinking, if he is asking that question, that means he doesn't know whether he wants to live here, so I don't want him. But I asked him, how much money did he have? He said, $200,000. That was like $1 million now. I wasn't even tempted. I said, I think you should go to India. I only asked the question to be sure that he had enough money to go to India. But money has never been my priority. I know that there was one woman, her name is Austin, and she was one of the wealthiest women in America. And I stayed at her home. And she was a big fan on feminism, too much so. And I tried to tone her down a little bit. And she got very offended with me and decided she didn't want me in her home anymore. It didn't matter to me at all. I'm not going to flatter people because they can help me. I felt rather let me clear the air on this subject so she knows where I stand. In fact, at Ananda, women and men are absolutely equal. We have as many women as we do men in positions of authority. There is no thought that men or women are better than each of the others. In fact, it's certainly true. Women are always thinking men are impractical, and men are always thinking women are impractical. And the truth is that they're impractical and practical in different ways. And vive la différence. You need that difference. You need to understand that each can gain from the other. The women are more intuitive. They feel more for people. Men are more rational, but reason too, has its particular advantages. I can see in any direction that you can offer me what the result will be 10 years from now. That's a more rational approach than the reason, than the feeling one, but it too is reasonable, it's sound. So women and men are not, the subject doesn't come up in our communities, and I'm delighted that it doesn't. Sometimes people will tease each other that way, but it's only in fun. There's no battle of the sexes here, as you find so often in the world. Well, these are some of the things that I think that will help to bring about the new age. Because I think that feminine power in this new age is going to be much more important than it has been so far. Women have not felt empowered because so much of society is based on sheer logic. But I think in time, women, this will be an age of more feeling, and women will assume more and more important roles in society. Another very interesting thing is that in school, women, the girls, are usually smarter than the boys. And that, of course, is not a pleasing statistic for me, but it's a fact. In general, I would have to say that women are often better than men. And yet you find that the really excellent people in every field are always men. even in fields that are dominated by women, like cooking or sewing or tailoring, the best ones are always men. Why is that? I don't know. It's a fascinating thing to think about. But when you can look at these things and think how interesting, rather than make it a basis for warfare, then you have a harmonious and proper society. I think that more and more, I know that when Obama was elected, feminists were saying, even the blacks come ahead of the women. You're always going to find some critic. I say that blacks, whites, red, take their skin off, they're all red. What's the difference? It's a foolish thing. But I think that, yes, in time, it's high time we got a woman president. It's high time people in general understood that there is no difference, except there is a difference, not in quality, but in particular directions of thinking. We need more feminine energy. We need more feeling energy. We need less of this ruthless competition. I know that women in business have told one another, if you want to succeed, then think like a man, be aggressive. That is a pity to talk like that. I think society is coming to that point where both will become completely equal, and men will become more feelingful, and women will become more calm and less emotional. And all of these things, this age of Dwapara, which is an age of energy, it will be an age when more people are thinking in terms of feeling love for people. Why do we have to help people? Not for any reasonable reason, but because it's a good thing to do, because I want to help people. You don't have to have a reason for helping people. People said after the Second World War, when America gave money to many countries, how many times in history has it ever happened before? I would say none. That a country was attacked and beat the enemy and then stooped down to lift them up and help them out. I think America is the first time in history where that has been done. This kind of thing people were saying in those days, well, but they knew it was in their own interest to help others. Okay, at least they did it in the right for the right reason. Yes, of course it's in your own interest. Everything you do, in a sense, is in your own interest. But you are happier when you help people, and you are less happy when you don't. When there was this big war between Russia and America as to who would get the first person on the moon, somebody suggested we put enough money out to get a dog onto the moon. And the Americans would be so concerned for that dog, they'd raise the money to bring it back again. Well, this is America. This is what is making America such a great country. Much more than the fact that we earn all this money and so on. The fact that we share our wealth, that we work more from the heart and less just from cold intellect. These are all things to be considered when you think in terms of communities. Because when we work together, we feel a natural love for a few people. I have a little tiny round thing, the sort of thing you put under a glass. I was in Florence, in Firenze, in Italy, a few months ago, and I woke up with this great inspiration. And I tried to find some paper. Usually there's notepaper in a hotel room. Couldn't find anything. I looked in my bags. There was nothing to write on. Finally, I found this little thing under a glass, and I had to write the whole inspiration out on that glass. But I said that when you understand that the thing that everybody is looking for is bliss, then how can you not love everybody? Because you know they all want the same thing. It makes everybody in the world utterly lovable, and it's such a thrilling thought to have. You see that what they're looking for is bliss. You see that what they want in life is bliss. And one wonderful thing, you know, Shankaracharya gave his definition of God as Satchidananda. Literally, that's existence, consciousness, bliss. But Master added ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. Now, that's a very important addition, which very many people don't understand completely. That bliss, I offer this as my explanation for God, why God created the universe. It's the nature of bliss to want to be expansive. It's the nature of bliss to want to express itself in ever expansive ways. And the absolutely wonderful thing is that here we're just a tiny drop of people on this planet. But everybody manifests that bliss and manifests the hunger for that bliss in a unique way. Everybody has his own particular path to that bliss. Everybody expresses that bliss in a new and different way. It's not as if when you become a saint, you become like all other saints. Yes, it's true, you all love, you're humble, you're blissful, you have saintly qualities. It's not as if some saints were full of rage and so on. Yet each one in his own way is different. Most people are not different. It's sort of like seeing somebody coming out of a cowboy movie and sort of walking with as if with bowed legs because he's been watching these cowboys on horseback. People imitate each other. And you find that Americans act like Americans and Italians act like Italians and Frenchmen act like Frenchmen. But they're not acting like themselves. We need to learn, and this is an important thing in communities. Don't, and this is what Ananda really believes, and I hope practices, I have seen this, that each one is himself. We're not all blissful in the same way. It's not something we put on. It's something that comes from inside. And so, as I look around me and see all your faces, I see that every one of you is specially a manifestation of that bliss. Don't think you have to do just the way other people do. Be centered in yourself and know that this is how you can express bliss in your life. Don't think you've got to express it the way somebody else does. But know that that is really what you're trying to do. The other day, 2 days ago, I was in Palo Alto, and there's that coffee shop next to Kepler's. And a group of us was sitting at the table there. At the table right next to ours, there was a man who was extremely serious about what he was doing. And he had this creased forehead and all the lines on his face being very serious about some little thing, I don't know what. But I thought, what he's really doing it for is he wants to find bliss. So why can't he do it with bliss? He thinks that after all that seriousness and dedication, absolute determination and so on, he'll finally perhaps find what he wants at the end. Then why not seek it with that? If you are seeking bliss, then why not seek with bliss? Why seek it at the end of the road? Why not seek it right now? Be blissful in your work. This is one of the lessons that the spiritual life teaches us. This is one of the lessons that communities like Ananda can help you to learn. Work with bliss. Don't think that at the end of the miserable trail you'll finally find a little glimmer of peace of mind or something. That's a delusion. Whatever attitude you work with is what you'll find at the end. Work with bliss and you'll have bliss right now. So this is one reason why we should love everybody, because even the worst mafioso really is looking for bliss. He just doesn't know it. And he thinks he'll find it by revenge, by power, by getting even with people and so on. He won't find it. He'll discover in the end that didn't work. It's sort of like that story that I've often told of this man in boot camp in the Second World War. And he was going around picking up pieces of paper off the ground. This isn't it. This isn't it. And that's all he did, and they finally decided this man had better see the camp psychiatrist. So he went into the camp psychiatrist's office, and instead of relating to the psychiatrist, he picked up pieces of paper on his desk and listened to it. Finally, the camp psychiatrist recommended him for a medical discharge. As soon as he got that piece of paper, he said, "This is it." And so it is that you think that this is going to give you what you want, and that doesn't do it. That doesn't do it. After many incarnations, how many? Well, I hate almost to tell you. probably days of Brahma. It takes 5 to 8 million lives even to reach the human level. And having reached that level, you can still fall, not very often, but there's a strange story, that true story, of a woman who was visiting Tibet. And no, she wasn't. The woman who reported the story was a visitor. But there was a girl there, and this lama, very old man, tried to molest her, and she was able to just push him away and run home. And she ran home to her mother and told him about this, and the mother said, "Well, he's a very holy man. Why don't you go and find out what was on his mind?" So she went back, and she said, "Look, I'm sorry I repulsed you," and so on. And he said, "No, I'm not interested. What I was only thinking that Lama so-and-so was ready to be reborn, and would, in order to ensure that he got a human birth, I wanted him to be born to you. But in the meanwhile, two donkeys copulated in the field nearby, and he'll be born as a donkey next time." What a strange story. I don't know that I approve of the Lama doing this, but it is true that if you live a donkey-like life, you'll have to be a donkey next time. If you live like a tiger, you'll be a tiger next time. And sometimes you find stories of horses, for example, that can spell out 100 different words. This sort of thing is very unusual, but it's an indication of a fallen soul. You usually go back for only one lifetime, and then you come back to the human level again. But if you keep on sinning, then you may be thrown way down. And this gets scary. You can be thrown how far down? To the level of a germ. Think of having to come back all that long ladder of evolution from such a low level, knowing inside that you're much more than you're actually expressing in yourself. It must be a terrible punishment. But these are realities, and they're not your realities, they're not my reality. But it is good to know that you can sink that far if you do. One of the things that drew me to the spiritual path was the realization that there isn't anybody in this world that I could have not become like. I could have become a drunkard, a thief, a murderer, who knows, just with a few wrong deeds that have pushed me more and more in that direction. I can't define myself by what I am and what my desires are. I have the capacity, potential, to be like anybody in this world. And it made me really desperate to seek truth. But how long does it take? Well, it can take days of Brahma, billions of years. Once you reach the human level, the capacity for error becomes almost infinite. This job didn't give me the money I wanted. Maybe that one did. Maybe this didn't do it. This will work. This isn't it. This isn't it. This isn't it. Finally, the only thing that is it is the desire for liberation. One time, Norman said to Master, he's a brother disciple of mine, "Sir, I don't think I have very good karma." Master said, "Remember this. It takes very, very, very good karma even to want to know God." And when you have that desire, don't let go of it. Don't play with fire, because you can wander for a long time. Norman one time had a vision in which he saw himself with Master 80,000 years ago on Lemuria. Well, frankly, I don't know if his visions were valid or not, but it made me ask Master, "Sir, have I been with you been your disciple for thousands of years?" He said, "It's been a long time, that's all I'll say." Well, it does take a long time, but it needn't. The thing is that somehow you have to persuade your mind that you don't want these things, you don't want this, you don't want that. And it takes a long time to reach the point where you know that nothing will work except God. Once you reach that point, you're free already. Once you have the desire for God, you're free already. Oh, it may take a few lifetimes after that, but you're free already, because that desire, too, has to be fulfilled. So remember, communities are one way, and a very important way, of giving people hope that they can be better than they are, that their own potential is higher than it seems, that it is possible to love other people and not be taken advantage of. It is possible to be generous and not be taken advantage of. It is possible to be kind and not be taken advantage of. And the world will take advantage of you. In communities, it doesn't. And in communities, you can see again and again that if we are dharmic, there is that saying, we have two principles at Ananda. People are more important than things, more important than principles, than I should say, projects, more important than anything. The need of the individual comes foremost in our minds. And the second is, yata dharma stata jaya. Where there is dharma, there is victory. And we have believed in that. And I have tried again and again in my life to, I have somehow managed, in spite of all temptation, to adhere strictly to what I knew was the right path, even if it looked like I would fail. And always I came out in the end on top. There was one time when I was building Ananda, I had to go out and earn all the money myself. It's not as if I had a lot of rich people pitching in with me. I had to earn it. I gave classes around the Bay Area, every night a different town, a different class. I always made it a point to make the price of these classes such that everybody could afford to pay. But if somebody couldn't or said that he couldn't, then I always said, all right, do something like set up chairs before the class or some service like that. I insisted they do something, but in every case, I would, if they said they couldn't, I said, we'll take it anyway, because that to me was for my own conscience. I found that in every case, the people whom I allowed to take the classes could have paid. There was one woman who said she was flying back east to visit her parents and she wouldn't be at the next class. And I said, well, so you can afford to fly east. Oh, yes, I can afford the money for things that are important to me. Well, that was something of an insult, but I just didn't say anything. There was another couple that invited me to dinner, and they told me they had just spent $50 on books. Well, that was the money that I would have charged the two of them for their classes, 25 for both Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga. I didn't say anything. But I found in every case, those whom I allowed to take the classes for virtually for free, they could have paid. It was for my conscience that I let them not do it. But it was a very minimal fee, 6 weeks, one class a week of Hatha Yoga, $15, or Raja Yoga, $15. If they took the two, $25. That anybody could afford that in this society today. And there was one man in Sacramento to whom I said, well, he said he couldn't afford it. I said, well, can you come up and work in the community for a weekend? He looked at me as if I was cheating him. I said, I don't need students like that. But I built this place on that kind of money, that the money I earned from these classes. And I became a popular teacher. I had about 300 students a week. And all together in the different towns, I earned about $50,000 a year that way, and it all went toward building Ananda. But now we don't need to do that so much. Now we can all pitch in and help out. Yes, it was a struggle in the beginning, but I'm so grateful for the fact that I did hang in there. There was a time when because money was never an interest of mine. I know that when I was 16, my dad said that he wanted to buy me a tuxedo. I said, don't bother, Dad, I'll never wear it. In fact, I'll never earn enough money to pay income tax. And it's been true. I've never earned enough money to pay income tax because the money I earned from those classes all went for other purposes, not for me. So even at 16, I knew that was where my life direction was. The thing is that I've always been taken care of. And wherever I've gone, somehow God has taken care of me. Somehow it seems as if it wouldn't possibly happen, but it did. And strangers have come up and helped me. It's a wonderful thing. When you love everybody, people feel that love. I remember this concert I went to in Paris. It was my birthday, and it was in a church, and they were just closing the door, saying they didn't have any more room for other people, and I cried out in French, "But it's my birthday." And they said, "Oh, well, come in." So they had me, but the hall was completely full, so they had to put me on behind the altar with about six other people. And later I was on the metro, the subway, and this old woman came up to me and she said, "Do you remember me?" I said, "Well, no." But I was in the audience. There were 700 people in that audience. How could you have had that feeling of knowing me personally? But that's what you get when you love people, they feel it. And another wonderful thing is that when you feel this bliss, other people feel this bliss. What more wonderful thing can you give to people than that bliss? Whatever feeling you have, feel that you're radiating it outward to other people. Don't keep it as a secret. You'll find that if you look at strangers and smile at them, they will feel it. It will change their lives even. Be what you want to be it now, and don't say, "I'll be that someday." Work with bliss, and you'll find everything is blissful for you. These things I say after many years. I've been 62 years on the path now, and I can say that it's been an absolutely wonderful experience. I don't have all those wonderful visions that people talk about. I'd love to. Master said that in your past lives, you were full of doubt. As a result of that, these things are being hidden from you. I just say, okay, it doesn't matter. I feel blissful, that's what matters. The only vision I've ever had, I'll confess this to you, suddenly I saw this large green face. I would love to be able to say, "Oh yes, I see this." Well, it isn't so, and it hasn't happened. And I suppose it will. Master said that, he said to me, "God won't come to you until the end of life. Death itself is the final sacrifice you have to make." Fine. I know that God is with me. That's all that matters. Don't seek God for the circus. Don't seek God for the phenomena. Don't seek him for miracles. Seek him for his love and his bliss. And bliss is more important than love, because bliss is something that is completely self-giving, whereas love is always thinking in terms of receiving also. Don't think in terms of any receiving. I have found that, well, you know, when I was thrown out of SRF, it was done with imprecations, curses, and insults. And it would have been very easy for me to become bitter. These were my dearest friends, my immediate superiors, people I looked up to, people I embraced as my own. And suddenly they were treating me like the world's greatest pariah. It would have been easy to become bitter. I thought, if I become bitter, I will lose twice. It's not worth it. I choose to love. And I found that in spite of that, it was a period of great suffering for me. But when I had to speak in public, people said what they felt from me was joy. And I thought, joy? That's the one thing I couldn't think. But I knew that underneath the sands of this great suffering I was going through, there was that joy there. It never left me. God will be with you. He will test you. If you're sincere, he will give you every test possible. But for instance, my doubts of the past, which were my greatest fault, Master told me, have been my greatest blessing. You know, when you break a bone, the healing part of the bone becomes stronger than the bone around it. So when you have a fault and you finally overcome that fault, it becomes your strongest virtue. This is a wonderful thing to think about. You know, one other wonderful thing is that as you meditate and overcome some fault that you felt you couldn't possibly overcome. It was so strong in you. Once it's gone, it's gone. And you just, it doesn't mean anything to you. You just think, what was all the excitement about? Remember, if you have anger or lust or greed or desire for anything wrong and so on, remember that that same energy, once you've gotten rid of it, you're not killing a part of yourself. You're releasing a part of yourself to be in its higher octave. You lose nothing, you gain everything. So by my doubts, it has given me the opportunity and the ability to answer just about any doubt anybody can possibly ask me, because I've thought it all through and I know the answer to it. Well, this is a great blessing, and this is why Master has me teaching people, because through that I can help many people. Remember, don't worry about your faults. They will loom up before you as if they were big demons ready to grasp you. If you go through that, it'll be just a cloud. In fact, it won't even be a cloud. There'll be blue skies, and it'll be as if it had never been at all. So communities are a way of helping people all over the world to begin to get a little faith in themselves. The world tries to pull you down. The world tries to say, you talk about spiritual things, oh, come on, have a drink. The world doesn't help you. Don't think that people, just because they smile at you, that they're your friends. Your friends are those who will help you to perfect yourself. Those for your friends are those who see you in your own higher potential, so that even if you're full of flaws, your friends will say, no, you've got the ability to grow. In Ananda, you have that kind of friends. People, even when you're going through delusions, they'd all whispering against gossiping and so on. Everybody wants to help you to grow, to overcome. What a wonderful way to live. I have to say that I've been all over the world, well, a large part of the world. I've seen people in many, many different circumstances. Back in the days when I wanted to be a writer, before I met Master, I went to many different social levels and met people of many different kinds of outlook on life and so on. I have never seen a group of people like those in our different communities. If you want to join a community and are not a member, I'd say think of this as your first option. But don't feel that you have to limit yourself. Don't feel that you need to join Ananda. Do try to get together with a few friends who share your ideals, and you'll find yourself many leagues ahead if you say, this is the model we're following. If you take Ananda as that model, then I think that what we have done here can actually work easily everywhere. Otherwise, yes, the difficulties we had starting Ananda, everybody will have the same kind of difficulties. Not many people have the strength or whatever it takes, the patience and whatever, to be able to survive that kind of opposition in the beginning. But it'll be much easier if you can say, this is the model we're going to follow. And if all you and your friends do this, you will see that this is what will change the world. People will never get it. You see people shouting for peace angrily. You don't get peace by being angry. You get it by being peaceful. You don't get brotherly love by hatred and shouting at each other and criticizing. You get it by loving. You bring bliss into this world by living bliss and not by expecting it somewhere. So I think that Ananda, quite honestly, I speak it from my heart. I think it offers the greatest thing that the world has today as a path to inner peace and outer peace. We won't find it quickly. We're going to go through, as I said, very difficult times. People will be starving to death. That won't be a joke. This will cause warfare. If one person, there are 35,000 known atomic weapons in the world. That doesn't speak for the unknown ones, the ones developed in secrecy. If one person drops an atom bomb, do you think everybody's going to say, no, we won't do this anymore? I don't think so. I think a madness will seize the human race. You can be oases of peace, but you will have much more of an oasis. It'll be green and flourishing if a group of you do it than if individuals do it. Back in Hiroshima, when America dropped that atom bomb on Japan, which is our bad karma, there was one spiritual group there that was not affected by the bomb. I have read about this. I can't say I've been there and seen it. But when you live for God, when you dedicate yourself to God, God will protect you. It will be difficult to feel that protection on your own. Remember those 6 sticks that old man had his sons bring him? When you are together, when you're a group together, you will find that you have a strength, and a strength in your devotion to God and in your ideals, that will help you to sail through all hard times. And also remember my practical suggestion, that one town in the Midwest that had its own currency. I do think that the money in this country won't be worth, this is what Master said, it won't be worth the paper it's printed on. But you can have your own currency if you can manage to do it, and I don't have the brains for it myself. All I can do is report that this has happened. There is a community in Italy that is doing it. It's called Damanhur. And we could do something similar, particularly if we have other communities, not necessarily Yogananda followers, not necessarily yogis, but groups of people who build a broad base by the fact of there being many communities. We can stay out of this hard time that is coming. Will this time be a punishment? No. It'll be a cleansing. When we come out of this time of great suffering, of international warfare, I think many, many people will be destroyed. But when we come out of it, we'll see a better world, a world of peace and brotherhood. Master said there won't be another war for 300 years. People will be so sick of fighting. But there will be peace then, and we can help to build for that peace. And that ideal that I had as a child, which was partly inspired by Lost Horizon, that we have developed communities that can preserve those values, we can help the whole world to rise again. So in those times, communities like ours will be even more important. They're very important now. They'll be more important than ever then. Please take my word seriously, because we're facing a serious time. But please take them seriously also for your own selves. Because the more you have inner peace, the more you have what you yourself really want. And you can struggle all your life and finally reach the point where you have a little security and a little peace. I know my grandfather came to visit me at Mount Washington. He was 84, my age. He said, I've been always thinking if I work one more year, I'll be able to relax more and enjoy more. Now I'm deaf, I can't see, I can't enjoy life. I have the money with it to enjoy it, and I can't enjoy it. Don't be like that. Don't think, well, the future will give me that kind of security. Have it right now. Be secure in yourself. Be secure in your bliss. Joy to all of you.
Let come who will, but if they alter like a soft and sweet song. Life is a dream.
Life is a dream.
Thank you.